So if you don't know, we work with a school in Cambodia that is for lower-income Cambodian children. There's about 200 students at our school. We have kindergarten through 11th grade. We'll start in September. And they pay a small tuition to go to the school, but they get a better deal for their education than they would at another school. And it's also a Christian school where we teach Bible and have chapel. And that is basically what we are doing. I work as a vice principal. Natalie's working as English teacher and English program facilitator. So that's basically what we do. And I'll share a little bit about some of our staff members' lives in general. To kind of help you understand where we are now. We've been in Cambodia 10 years, so we kind of got a good feel about what things are like there. And we've seen things like this over and over. In Cambodia, it's a rapidly modernizing, developing country, and you've got a lot of young people. The demographic is kind of the opposite of Japan, and you know, in the U.S., we've got a lot of old people and fewer young people. In Cambodia, you've got a lot of young people. And these young kids come from the countryside to the city to go to school, to try to find a job, to support their families back home, to, you know, to find a spouse and raise a family and try to make a better life for themselves. And they come to Phnom Penh, and it's such a totally different world than the countryside. They've grown up on the farm, you know, no running water, probably no electricity, and they come to the big old city of Phnom Penh, and everything is just so completely different. And a lot of times they're taken advantage of by scams and things, and sometimes they find a good school to go to, sometimes they find a school that's kind of a scam where they take their money and then the teacher doesn't show up. And sometimes they can come and live in the city with family members, or sometimes they just have to show up and try to find a job. I mean, some people even will they'll just have a hammock in the back where they work, and that's where they live. And they come and they live in little small cement boxes if they find a rental home, you know, $20 a month. You can rent a room with a tiny bathroom closet in there, and you know, they'll live as many people in a room as can sleep on the floor, and work very low-paying jobs and long hours. And through all of this, some of them give up, go back home because it's too hard, or they ran out of money, couldn't find a job. Some of them end up getting degrees, getting jobs, and these are the people that are our staff and faculty at our school in Cambodia, and they are pretty strong people. You know, I'm pretty humbled just working with them and how much they go through every day. They wash their clothes by hand and still come to work full time and on time and work hard at it. And so when I look at this, you know, for the last 10 years, I'm thinking, whoa, what do we have to offer these people that are so strong? They've kind of suffered and endured so much. What can we really offer them? And so after 10 years of being there, we've just seen how capable Cambodians are in so many ways. And the last 2 years I've been managing the school, and there's 20 different daily tasks and things that I do. And, you know, 18 or 19 out of the 20, I think our staff members could be trained to do that. And so where we're looking forward to for the next couple of years is going to be passing on those tasks to the local workers. I've already found someone to take my disciplinarian job, where he'll start in September. Oh, he'll start where I won't even be there. But hopefully through some coaching and working side by side with these guys and gals, in another couple years, I won't need to be full time at the school. Maybe not at the school at all. So that's kind of where we're looking at, is to coach and work with the staff to be able to hand over a lot of what we're doing. And I think probably one foreigner at the school would be enough to provide accountability and, do the financial planning and things like that. So that's where we are now. Any questions? I can't remember who was here last year or 2 years ago and what we talked about. Yeah, so it's my name's Andrew, and whatever's caught your attention or whatever you'd like to know about the school, we appreciate your support of the school, and I just want to. No, our staff is all around the. They're like most people. If they find a job that pays better, they'll probably take it. So part of the process of getting the school is getting the tuition to a level that can support teachers at a level that they won't be moving on all the time. So this year we've had a lot of teachers stay, whereas last year we had a lot of teachers go. So we were able to raise tuition and raise salaries. So I think we're getting close to the pay that can keep teachers.
Do any of them live on the property they were at school?
In the past, there have been some. I think there might be one right now. Yeah, there are some rooms. Yeah, okay, one office staff member is living on campus right now. There have been more. There are rooms on the campus for teachers, but especially teachers with families, the rooms are a little too small for that, so not very many right now. That's one project on the school, is to remodel those rooms.
So what other alternatives do kids have besides going to school?
Yeah, other alternatives to our school would be public school system. They probably cost them about the same to go to the public schools as our school, and they get a half a day, and we offer a full day. And then there's other private schools that are probably a little more expensive than ours and also just get a half day.
So your tuition is comparable to what they pay on the public school?
Yeah. Got a couple school guys in here. You know about schools.
So if you were to delegate some of these tasks that you do, do you have certain things that you want to move on to, spend your time doing X or Y?
My next 2 years is going to be trying to help them along through that process. And then at some point, I will have less to do. So that is the hope. Is that I will not have as much at the school to do in the future.
Maybe consulting or coaching would be more of both of our role.
Mm-hmm.
We get to the point where we're not, we don't want to be up front leaders in the school. We want to be helping Cambodians alongside them. So, we do more of that. And, I'm not sure.
Was that what you wanted to know?
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's still a couple of years out.
Well, it'll be over the next couple of years, I hope, to just step by step. So, we don't really have a timeline, but, after a year, maybe I would just be there 4 days a week or something, and then another year just be at 2 days a week or something like that. So.
Is it growing?
2 to 3 million, growing rapidly. In the community, I would say, the school has a pretty good reputation, and I only interact with the parents of children that have behavior problems, but most of them have been pretty nice too. Americans are kind of looked up to, I think, just because we come from a wealthy, educated country. So.
Now that you said last time, I want to say a little bit about what you said last time. How the government viewed, a Christian school coming in versus was it primarily Hindu or whatever. I'm sorry, I'm an Indian. Sorry.
Yeah.
as far as how that's viewed, the Christian.
There's freedom of religion guaranteed by the government in Cambodia, so they can't legally shut us down or anything. And the government come and inspect the school 2 or 3 times a year, and so sometimes when they come, they look at the schedule and they see like Bible class and on the schedule, and they say something about it like, "You're not supposed to teach religion," and then we just continue on it, there's a lot of things people saying that just, there's no, yeah, right, just, so. To a Buddhist, yeah, you could probably do that, yeah. Deep down, originally, yeah, that's probably true. Most countries where Buddhism is kind of, it's the state religion of Cambodia, and they've got, Buddha statues that they worship. So they would say, yeah, Buddha is God, and we worship Buddha, and Buddhism is our religion. But they definitely are more open to like, well, that's your truth and this is my truth and that kind of thing. So they're fine that we're Christians, and they're not upset with that. We're from America, so we're Christians. And that's just the way it is. Yeah. So. Yeah, there's probably just as many Christians in China now as in the U.S., But America's a Christian nation, so that's just the stereotype. And, Cambodia is a Buddhist nation, but most people don't know anything that Buddha taught, so.
Are there a lot of Christians there?
Yeah. Yeah, there's all kinds of churches, and especially in Phnom Penh, there's all kinds of churches and missionaries and Christian organizations. So I don't know if it's a popular missionary destination. I don't know if you can say that. No, I think the difficulty, like some of our faculty members are, they're Christians, but their family is not. And they have a lot of difficulties because the religion is just an integral part of their culture of Cambodia. So funerals and weddings and everything is a religious, event. So I'm not going to go burn incense to Buddha anymore, or I'm not going to worship ancestors anymore. It's more than just changing your religion. It's kind of giving up on your culture, giving up on your people, and it's like if somebody in America had a parent that didn't have any money, and they said, "I'm not going to take care of you," that's how they would feel when a Cambodian becomes a Christian. It's kind of betraying their family. So they don't, beat Christians up or put them in jail, but it's a very difficult thing to do. Yeah, almost all of our kids would be non-Christian families. I haven't heard much. I don't know if I've heard anything from any parent either way. they don't seem to notice. You know, I don't know. They just have a different perspective on things. Like if your kids were going to school and then all of a sudden it became a Muslim school, you know, everybody would take their kids out immediately. But in Cambodia, it doesn't really seem to be that way. I don't know. Are they a problem? Are Muslims a problem? There are Muslims in Cambodia. They're not a radicalized, violent group in Cambodia.
They kind of keep it to themselves, generally.
Yeah, they're in their own.
They're very small pockets. There are less Muslims than Christians in Cambodia.
Yeah, right. Most of the Muslims are an ethnic minority, so they have their own villages and they keep to themselves and speak a different language. So I don't know if we've had any ISIS people in Cambodia. Yep. Yeah, so all students will take English starting in first grade.
You guys, you're adding a grade each year, right? I guess
In September we start 11th grade, so next 2019 in June we'll have a graduating class. Retention is pretty good. There is some coming and going, but it's hard to tell. It's such a new school. Like the higher grades were the students that started from the beginning, and so they seem to stay more than some of the lower grades. But that's also probably because it's a lot easier to switch schools when kids are in elementary school, and then when they get up to middle school, for whatever reason, their parents want them to stay in the same school. And so our middle and high school, the tuition goes up. So there'll be a few probably that we'll lose from the increased tuition. But so, yeah, don't really know. We'll have to wait and see. Lots of things are required in Cambodia, but don't happen. So I think it's required until the end of middle school. I don't really remember exactly. There is some kind of legal requirement, but when you've got a public school system that still costs money, you know, what are you going to do? I would say almost all children in Phnom Penh are in school. Not all of them finish high school, but not even by a long shot. But a lot of them, probably most, would finish elementary school and probably still at least a majority up to middle school. So
at high school, it's voluntary.
I think, do you know if there's a law about kids have to go to high school? Because if you go out into villages and small towns, they may not even have a high school. But we had a friend who, he had gone through college, but when he went to high school, he had to go live at the temple because the high school was in town and he lived out in the countryside. So the only way he could go to high school was to either live with the family or go to the temple. So
there aren't any legal consequences, even if your child...
Yeah, there's no consequence, yeah. You could just keep your kid on the farm and they'd just be illiterate and farming. So, yeah. And there's a big problem at public schools, even in the city, where kids just kind of don't go to class. And the parents are working, so they can't do anything about it. So. About 200. We sure hope so. Yeah. I mean, the elementary classes are right now are about 15 to 20 students, and then up at the high school they're about 6. So we hope that will happen. You know, the high school students have stayed from elementary school back when there were just 10 students maybe in an elementary grade. So. I think it would be pretty varied, but most of them would be bigger. I mean, public schools, you might have like 60 students in one classroom, and you might have 2 or 3 sections of a 10th grade, right? 50 students in each. You might have 150, 200 students in one grade. Of course, it's a big, big school, so... Yeah, they're just scattered all around. I mean, we're the only school within a mile or two radius, I think. The school is in a village, and then out on the highway, maybe a mile or two away along the highway, there's a lot of private schools, and also the public schools are there too. So. Within a 5-mile radius, there's probably 20, 30 different kinds of schools, yeah.
2 miles is considered far.
Yeah, and population density is pretty high.
Yeah.
Yeah. People live in small houses, you know, with grandma and grandpa and all the grandkids, so... We don't have that problem. We get bottled water. Yeah, we use well water. There's no city water at the school.
But the well water isn't drinkable.
Well water is not potable.
We just use it for washing clothes, washing dishes, stuff like that we can't drink it. Mm-hmm. But drinking water is delivered.
Yeah, drinking water is everywhere, all over, cheaply available. Yeah, we get the, 20-gallon jug with a little spigot on it. Are we out of time? We're out of time. Glad to be here.
As far as like what your biggest need, like what do you think, is there a need that the school has?
The biggest need for the school, hard to say. There are plans to build more at the school, which costs money. Without that, the school would still go on. So I don't know if that's the most important thing. We do want volunteer teachers to come and teach English. So if someone wanted to come for a year and live in Cambodia and teach English, that would be up on the top of the list. Yeah. What's that? Yeah, most of them would, not as well. And we have some foreign, you know, expert teachers like Natalie teaching English, whereas other schools would just have a poorly trained person that doesn't speak English very well teaching English.
So.
Oh, you wouldn't need to be able to speak the language to teach English, no. And it would probably be good for the students because they couldn't just default back to their own language to speak to you. They'd have to try. So, sometimes it's a drawback to have a teacher that speaks their language because they know you can understand what they're saying, so they just don't bother with English. But if you have to struggle through it, you learn it. So it's almost probably, it probably is better for. We don't have a band director yet either. So if someone wanted to come and do band, direct the band, you know. That might not be good for your blood pressure, though. Just for one day, right? The songbooks? No.